So good. You guys killed that. That was awesome. Hey, I love that song. It's such a fun song. And I think like you can hear it because it says it over and over and over again. But there's a real deep longing and yearning for something there that song is talking about. And I think that hits because it puts to words something a lot of us feel, but we don't always say out loud, right? And look, if you're here and you've ever been ghosted, if you've ever been used, if you've ever been lonely in a crowded room, then you know exactly what that means. And a lot of us aren't asking for perfect people or something like that, right? What we're asking for is something real. We want something that lasts, something that's safe. We want deep relationships. We want to feel like we're winning in our relationships, but too often we're living in a world where we feel like we're losing those often. And there's a lot of reasons for that. I mean, some of us have seen bad examples, right? We don't even know where to start on building a winning relationship or what that even actually looks like. Myself, for example, I was a child of divorce, and I saw the damage that could cause in a family, in the strife that could cause in a family. Maybe some of you guys grew up that way, or maybe you're in it now. And so, like, growing up, I knew what I didn't want, right? And so when I came of age and I was going to start my own family, I was like, okay, I don't want that, but I don't actually know what it looks like to not do that. I didn't have the tools. I didn't know how to build something great, the thing that I was longing for. Some of us have been burned, right? Maybe you're in that place where you thought everything was good, and then one day it felt like somebody took the ground from underneath you. Some of us have been in that position. Some of us have experienced relationships and people as unsafe. And so now we just try and keep everybody at arm's distance, knowing that there's something that we're missing out on, but not willing to risk putting ourselves out there again for fear of that unsafety. Some of us have just become accustomed to the culture where relationships are disposable. That's the culture that we currently live in. Culture has trained us to want love, but avoid the very things that love requires, make love possible. Like, we want connection, right? But we want it without the cost of what connection requires. We want intimacy, but we want it without the vulnerability that true intimacy needs. We want the benefits of covenant, but we want it with an exit strategy in case something goes wrong or it doesn't quite work out. We're building relationships in a world that rewards options, not faithfulness. Right? Like, we'll sometimes say, well, I'm just protecting my peace. And sometimes what that means is I just actually never let anybody in because I got to protect my peace. We're surrounded by people, and we still feel isolated because digital connection is easy and real connection is costly. And we're getting accustomed to digital connection. All the stats say that Gen Z, which is kind of 16 up through like your mid to late 20s, Gen Z is delaying or ditching marriage and family more than any previous generation. And I don't think it's because they don't want love. I think that they're experiencing love as something that looks risky, something that looks expensive, and something that looks unstable. They've got a terrible picture of what relationships and love are actually supposed to be. And in that uncertainty, we're settling for almost relationships, right? We're settling for situationships, right? If you don't know what that means, a situationship is when you're in a relationship with somebody and it has no definition, no boundaries, no, it just, you know, you're in a relationship, but we're not going to define it because, you know, we don't want to put any labels on it. We're in a situationship, right? That's a situation. We're settling for that. We're settling for DM intimacy. You can just slide up in somebody's DMs. That's direct message for those of you who don't know what a DM is, all right? I'm going to put y'all on game this morning, all right? We're settling for AI chatbots. It's happening at an increased rate. with each passing day. More and more people are developing a relationship with an AI chatbot. As a matter of fact, there have been several, far too many for me to be comfortable with. One is too many, but there's been several reported cases of teenagers actually choosing to end their own life because a relationship with an AI chatbot didn't go the way they thought it would. Like, I'm trying to give you the state of our culture and where we're at with relationships. We'll settle for cohabitation without covenant because it makes sense financially and it's easier, and why not? How do I know that I want to be with this person forever? Why wouldn't I just live with them for a little while to figure that out? And we'll ditch covenant. We'll settle for friendships that vanish the moment that it gets difficult. And we'll just cut those people off. We live in a world where we have never had more access to people and felt as lonely as we do in this current moment. American Psychiatric Association finds that they did a study that found early in 2004 is when they did this. 30% of adults, we're talking about adults now, not kids, 30% of adults say that they have experienced feelings of loneliness at least once a week over the past year. That is one in three people that they surveyed reporting feeling loneliness at least once a week for an entire year. So we live in this tension where we have this deep longing for a higher love. We have deep longing for meaningful, healthy, winning relationships, and yet at the same time we're afraid. We don't really know how to get those, and truthfully, probably feel a little bit unsure if it's even possible. So what if this tension that we're experiencing is actually the key to unlocking winning relationships? What if the first tool for a winning relationship is as simple as understanding that we are how we are designed and taking a step in that direction? Well, that design is exactly what we're going to explore this morning. And to do that, we're going to be opening up the Bible, because we believe that the Bible is the revelation of God to humanity. This is so much more than just basic instructions before leaving Earth. Okay, that's an old saying. I get it. Makes sense. But this is so much more than that. This book is the source of truth about who God is and about who we are. All right, that's why we're going to this. And so, like, when we're confronted with a tension, like the one we're dealing with this morning, we need to look to the source to find answers. Not Google, not ChatGPT, not your weird uncle, not your friend. Like, go to the source, okay? So we're going to begin our journey this morning in Genesis. And truthfully, I love the book of Genesis because there is so much going on in that book, and so much is being communicated to us from page one of Genesis. And truly, when you start to dig in and fully understand what all is going on in Genesis, it actually sets the tone for the rest of the Bible. It actually unlocks kind of parts of the rest of the Bible that are super helpful. And so we're going to actually start this morning in Genesis 1. For those of you who are unaware, Genesis 1 is the creation narrative, right? This is God creating everything that we know to exist. And so he creates these. In Genesis 1, the structure is he creates realms and then he fills them, right? So he creates the heavens and he fills them with heavenly hosts, the stars, the moon, all that stuff. He creates the air and he fills it with birds. He puts the waters in their places and puts boundary around the waters. And then he fills those waters. He creates dry land, and he fills the dry land with creatures, right? That's kind of the flow of Genesis 1. And then we get to the pinnacle of God's creative work in Genesis 1, where he creates human beings. And it's a super special moment and super fun to kind of dig in and explore it. We're going to turn to chapter 1, verse 26, and we're going to read, because I think this verse has got some things to say to us this morning. Chapter 1, verse 26, then God said, "Let us make human beings in our image to be like us. They will reign over the fish in the sea, the birds in the sky, the livestock, all the wild animals on the earth, and the small animals that scurry along the ground. Here's what I want us to pick out this morning. Let us make human beings in our image, made in God's image. Well, what does that mean? That means that we are made, we are designed, crafted personally to reflect the Creator of the universe. That word image is the Hebrew word tselem, which is the same word that is used for idol later on. Like when they say don't make idols, same word. Image, idol, same word. Okay? So in other words, part of the reasons we're not supposed to have idols or make idols or create images of God is because we're the image. Like God's like, don't, I already created it. Don't try it. All right? My art is better than your art, right? And so he's like, don't, we're supposed to be the living embodied reflection of the heart and character and essence of who God is, and we're supposed to be that here on earth, and he's given us dominion over all the creatures and all the realms, right? Except for the heavens. Those have different rulers, but we're the rulers down here. And so we're supposed to be God's living reflection. Man, that's kind of crazy. And it also begs the question, okay, well then, if we're supposed to reflect who God is, then what is God like? What is that reflection supposed to be like, that we're in his image? Well, then there's another, and look, we've done sermons on what God is like, and I'm sure we'll do more in the future because that's a question you could probably explore for a long time, right? But this morning, one of the things that I want us to focus on is actually right here again in this verse. And I don't know if you've ever really like taken time to like sit with this verse. I remember when it first like popped up and appeared to me. But in this verse it says, let us make human beings in our image to be like us. Those are plural words, right? And so like, I remember the first like, wait a second, but it's one God. So, but it says us right here in the very beginning. So how does that work, right? And so just a little bit of a sidetrack, but it's going to mean something for us here, right? What does it mean to say us and our right here in the beginning of Genesis? Well, actually, in verse 2 of Genesis 1, before we even get to this part, you've got God creates the heavens and the earth, right? And then it says that God's spirit was hovering over the waters, right? So right there in Genesis 1, you've got sort of this separate, you've got God, and then you've got his spirit that's hovering over waters. Okay, that's interesting, but maybe it means some sort of metaphorical thing. But then you fast forward, and this kind of gets explained all throughout the Bible, but if you fast forward to John chapter 1, it says that in the beginning was the Word. And you learn that that's actually AKA Jesus, all right? So it says, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God, and all things were made through him, and not one thing that was created apart from him. And you say, wait a second, so that means all the way back in the beginning, in Genesis 1, Jesus was there, right? So now you've got God, God's Spirit, and Jesus kind of all in this same place, but the same person who wrote Genesis also would later record this prayer that Israel says to this day that says, hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. And so how does all of that work? Well, that's where you get to this church word, the Trinity. It's this doctrine of the Trinity. How can you have one God but three, like how does that work, right? And so God is one in divine substance or being. You have one divine substance or being, but three distinct persons. You've got the Father, the Son, we call it the Holy Spirit. They're distinct from each other, right? But they share the same divine nature, the same attributes, and the same glory. All three have always existed. They are equally God, with no one being greater or older than another. And you're like, okay, my head's spinning. I'm in theology 101. I wasn't here for this morning. What does this have to do with me? What does this have to do with the relationships? I got you, all right? It's important to establish the Trinity because here's what's important for us this morning. The Trinity represents an eternal community of love within God. The Trinity represents an eternal community of love within God, where the Father, the Son, and the Spirit eternally relate to each other. They are in eternal, perfect, harmonious relationship centered on love. And so that means that love isn't just something that God does, it's who he is. God isn't just loving. He's not just somebody who loves. He literally is love. And because of that, you were made in the image of that. That's what you were made in the image of. You were designed, created, intended to reflect that. That's who God is, and you are made in His image. You are designed that way, which means that you weren't created for independence. You were created for relationship. And our current culture will tell you the opposite, right? The highest ethos of our current culture is the individual, the self. Everything that everybody is doing right now is all to elevate self. It's all for you. Everything should benefit you. And if it doesn't, the other person is wrong, right? Like, that's essentially how our culture operates right now. What's true for you is true for you, man. Do your own thing. Do you, boo-boo, right? Like, all of that, okay? It's all about you. But God's design is actually the opposite. You weren't designed for independence. You were designed for relationship because you were crafted in the image of the Trinity. It's important for us this morning because it means that that ache for a higher love that we have, it's not weakness, it's actually wiring. And this is why the first not good thing in the Bible actually comes along before sin. I don't know if you've ever thought about this, right? So you've got creation, everything's good, whatever, and then everybody's like, okay, and then somebody does something wrong and then it's all bad, right? That does happen, but before sin ever enters the picture, God calls something not good. Let's look at this in Genesis chapter 2, verse 18. Then the Lord God said, "It is not good for the man to be alone. I will make a helper who is just right for him." It is not good for man to be alone. Think about this. In this moment, Adam has purpose, right? God's given him a job to do. Hey, I want you to watch over the garden. I want you to rule over the earth that I've kind of created. You're supposed to be ruling over the fish and the birds and the animals and all that stuff. He's got purpose. He has paradise. I mean, everything God's made is good. He's got all the food. He's got provision, right? There's trees that are producing fruit that is good to eat. He's taken care of. He's got purpose. He's got paradise. He's got provision. He's even got pets, all right? He got to name all the animals. God brought him all the animals, like, hey, name all these. And so he's even got pets, all right? He's got all kinds of stuff that he could ever need. And God says, it's not good for man to be alone. My most recent binge watch on Netflix was the show called Alone. Anybody ever seen that? Any other Alone fans in here? Okay, I got one. Let's go. Me and Danny. All right. No, don't worry. I was in the minority in the first service too. I have reached the edges of Netflix is what this is telling me. So basically, for those of you who are unaware, this show, I'm going to give you some spoiler alerts too. So if you're like, man, it was in my queue, I'm going to tell you what happens. And so this show is basically 9 contestants. These people are outdoors survivalist type people. They compete in this game, and the game is to see who can last the longest on their own. All right, and basically you get dropped into a environment out in nature that's pretty extreme. Like in this season that I watched, they were in the Arctic Circle, and you get to bring 10 items. Right, and so like these guys and girls, they get 10 items. They drop them in a spot in the Arctic Circle, and they're like, "All right, call us when you're done." You know, like that's basically the show. And whoever can last the longest gets $500,000, which is like that's a pretty cool prize, right? So in this show, I was watching, there's a character named Dub. And you meet kind of early on, you meet all these characters. And at the very beginning of this season, he starts by saying that he doesn't like people. Like he's just like straight up like, "I don't like people. I prefer animals and nature. Like they're just better. I like being alone," right? He's got a family. He loves his family, but he doesn't really have anybody else. And he just says like, "I don't like people." So he's actually really excited to kind of get out in the woods by himself. Like that was his ideal scenario, you know? And, you know, you kind of get to know some of these characters throughout the season. They kind of tell their story a little bit, the ones who survive a little bit longer than the others. And you come to find out that Dub was actually bullied all throughout school. Like, from elementary all the way through high school, he got bullied. And he said, like, it was kind of a miracle that he even graduated. Like, he was surprised himself that he graduated. And what he learned through being bullied all of those years is that people were not safe for him, right? So for him, people equaled not safe because he got bullied. And so he just found comfort being away from people. He found animals to be more predictable than humans, and he liked the solitude that nature afforded him. Well, about 50 days into this game, he's out there 50 days just eating squirrel brains and fish and like whatever else he catches. I know, my wife couldn't watch it either. I saw some of you guys like scrunch up face. He's out there, right? He's out there day 50. He starts to wrestle with this idea. He goes, man, if I were to die out here and I have no relationships outside of my family, my life would just, like, what's the point? Like, what's the point of living if I don't have any sort of connections? He starts to see, like, he's like, my life would essentially be meaningless. Like, there'd be a couple people who miss me if I were to just disappear. And he starts to see that. And he wrestles with this idea of connection. And he kind of has this epiphany of, like, he actually does want people in his life. He starts to realize that relationships and connection are actually what's going to provide more meaning for him. And that those deep connections are important. And he starts to really miss his family, his mom, his dad, his sisters. And he starts to wonder if they're okay. And he starts to think, like, man, if I'm out here and I win this money and I go back and for whatever reason one of them ends up passing away, like, what's the point? And he gets so wrapped up in this thought of, like, I actually need connection and I need people and I need to see the people that are closest to me, that on day 80, He made it 80 days. Just a long time to be in the woods by yourself. He made it 80 days. And the winner, I think, made it 86 days. So technically, he was like, you know, 7 days away from winning $500,000. He didn't know that. I did because I'm watching the show. but on day 80, instead of hanging in and fighting it out and trying to win $500,000, he leaves. He calls him on his satellite phone. He says, hey, this is Dub. And I'm ready to tap out, because he just wants to go see his family. He just missed his family that much. What he learned, what Adam knew, what God saw, and what I think we need to understand is that connection and relationships is just part of what it means to be human. This is why you can have success and still feel alone. This is why online community, AI chatbots, thousands of followers, and even being productive will just never be enough for you. You were built, designed, patterned after, created for embodied, committed relationship. And before we talk about fixing horizontal relationships, we have to talk about the vertical one. And this might be the truth that some of you guys are here for this morning. The first and most important relationship you were created for is not marriage, it's not friends, it's God. The ache for a higher love ultimately points upward. The Trinity didn't just create you for relationship with others, He created you for relationship with Him, and sin has fractured that. We talk about loneliness horizontally, right? But the deepest loneliness you could ever feel is spiritual separation. As the deepest loneliness that you could ever experience. And the gospel is the story of God refusing to let you stay isolated. And so Jesus steps into our world. He lives the perfect life of love that we weren't capable of living. He dies in our place and rises again so that the relationship between you and God can be restored. And we can strive for great relationships, but truthfully, you can't build winning relationships on a disconnected soul. If you want the relationships in your life to win, you've got to start with Jesus. And if you've never put your faith and trust in Jesus, I think today is your day. Not to join a church, not to become religious, but to come home to a relationship that you were designed for. And so I don't want to take another step in this service without giving you an opportunity to step into that relationship. So would everybody just bow their heads and close their eyes? And if that's you, if you're here this morning and you're ready to put your faith in Jesus for the first time and fix that vertical relationship first, I'm going to pray. And right where you're at, you can talk to God from your heart to His. You don't have to do anything crazy, but just speak to Him right from where you're at. And And you can use my words as your own. You can say something like this: "Dear God, I want a relationship with you. I know that I'm a sinner and I need your forgiveness. I believe in Jesus. I believe that he came to this earth and lived the life that I couldn't and died in my place for my forgiveness. And I believe that you rose him from the grave 3 days later. Would you forgive me and help me to follow you for the rest of my life? In Jesus' name, amen." Hey, if you prayed that, the relationship doors between you and the creator of the universe are now wide open. And once that vertical relationship is restored, God doesn't leave us alone to figure out love. He actually gives us two living classrooms where that higher love can be practiced. It's two places that I think are most critical for this: marriage and the church. And so often we get it twisted when we talk about marriage, right? Marriage is not the source of love. So if you're looking for that to be your source, or you're thinking that's going to fix it, like you're looking in the wrong place. Marriage is actually a sign. Marriage is supposed to reflect faithfulness, covenant, Christ's love for the church. Marriage doesn't complete you. That person you're married to is not going to fix the hole in your heart. And it definitely doesn't fix broken people. You know what happens when two broken people get married? You got two people, broken people in a relationship. That's it. Like, you know, they're just going to come after each other. But when we do it right, what marriage is and what marriage becomes is a formation lab for love. An example of self-sacrificing love. Truthfully, marriage is where your selfishness goes to die and your love gets trained. That's what marriage really is. And if it doesn't do that, it's probably not going to last. Like, just being totally honest with you guys. Marriage is where your selfishness goes to die and your love gets trained. I got married when I was 22 years old. I was very young, but I was ready. I was like, I wanted to be married. I knew that I wanted to be married. I knew that who I wanted to be married to, and I was excited to be married. I wanted to and still want to be a great husband. Like, I want that to be one of the things that is said about me, right? Like, I think that that's so important. I thought I was ready. What I didn't realize was how much more my capacity for love would grow from the day that I said yes, or I do. What I also didn't realize is how much selfishness that I still had to work through. I remember several years ago, my daughter was right around 1 year old, and I was playing basketball in a church basketball league, and me, like, when I play sports, it's always like the seventh inning of the World Series, fourth quarter in the Super Bowl. It doesn't matter. Pickup game, it could be playing with students, it could be like whatever the scenario is, I'm giving that moment everything that I've got. It makes me fun to play with and terrible to play with all at the same time. But I love it, right? I just can't help myself. I'm basically a giant kid. And I know that about myself. And I was playing in this church league as if I was playing in the NBA. And I was going all in, and I tore my ACL. Yeah, it was the first, like, major injury in my life, actually. And I just remember, I go to the doctor, and kind of get into the process, and they're like, hey, after surgery, you're going to be 6 weeks non-weight-bearing on your left leg, which means no weight at all on the left leg. I had this, you know, full leg brace, so, you know, I just kind of moved around like this. I had the crutches, and basically I was sat up on the couch, and my wife was left alone to take care of her giant baby husband and her actual baby girl. And I just remember thinking, like, man, I can't do this again to her. And there are more important things than what I want. I remember thinking that in that moment, watching her work full time, take care of a kid, and help me. And I just thought, there's more important things than what I want. There was another time that we were moving again, and I think we've moved somewhere around 11 times in our, like, 14-year marriage. And we were moving again, and this particular time, she was leaving a group of friends, a community that she had cultivated in this place that we were at, And I just watched it like hurt her at a level that I hadn't seen before. And she was moving because of me. It was a decision I made. Hey, we're going to move again, following the job or whatever. And I just remember watching her go through that and thinking like, I can't do this to her again. I can't do it. There's more important things than what I think I want. And I've had to come to see my selfishness die more and more. Kirsten has been there. Kirsten's my wife. She's been there to pick me up off the floor and watch me rebuild myself from what felt like ground up. And I remember a few years ago on a long bus ride in Nicaragua, student Corbin, we were talking about marriage, and he asked me kind of sarcastically, he goes, oh yeah, do you love your wife more now than you ever have? Because that's like something that people say when they've been married for a long time. I love my wife more now than ever. And I looked at her and I was like, no, actually I don't. I love her the exact same amount I did when I said I do on that beach in Pensacola all those years ago. I said, but my capacity to love her well has grown exponentially since that day. My commitment to her, my love for her is the same, but my ability to do that well, that's grown a lot. And the more you're willing to die to yourself in marriage, the die to your selfishness, the better your marriage is going to be. And when you get two people to do that, that is an unshakable bedrock that love can be built on. So maybe you need to consider today, where do you need to die to your selfishness a little bit? Marriage can be this amazing training ground for love, but we don't always get it right. It's not something that we always get right. And to be honest, some of you guys are in here hearing this and you feel tension because you saw it done badly, you lived it done badly, or you tried it and it broke. And that pain is real. And I'm not going to minimize that. At the same time, we assume that because something is done wrong, that the design is wrong. And that's not true. I mean, 2 + 2 = 4, even if somebody answers 5, right? The truth doesn't stop being the truth because it was handled poorly. Just because someone misused it doesn't mean that it's not true. Just because somebody broke covenant doesn't mean covenant isn't beautiful. And just because a church hurt you doesn't mean that Jesus' vision for his church is flawed. Marriage isn't the only place where is a training ground for love and at the same time gets understood. The same is true for the church. The church has hurt people. The church has failed people. But failure doesn't erase design. And truthfully, not everyone is called to marriage. But everyone is called to love like that. And that's where the church comes in. See, the church is not a weekly event. It's not just what we're doing right here. Church is a covenant community. It's a place where people from different backgrounds, different socioeconomic status, different ethnicities, different stories, different sides of the political aisle should all come, be able to come together. Lions fans, Bears fans, Packer fans, like we're all supposed to be able to come to the same place and recognize that in Christ, we have the same spirit and we serve the same King. So in a world that isolates, the church is a place that pursues. In a world that cancels, the church is a place that forgives. In a world that avoids, the church is a place that leans in. The church is also designed to reflect the Trinity, a visible community of love. And you are designed for a higher love. A higher love in your marriage, a higher love with your kids, a higher love in your family, a higher love with your friends, and a higher love right here in the church. And it's worth the risk. It's worth getting back up again because it's what you were made for. So if that longing for a higher love is designed, and if your love will never be stronger than your closest relationships, then this can't just be an idea that we admire, but it's got to be a decision about how we're going to live, because design without decision changes nothing. You can, oh, I'm designed for this, but if you don't actually move towards it, it's not going to do anything. And so the first, if we want to start to see this in our life, the first thing that we need to do is stop numbing the ache. That ache for relationship, that ache for something deeper, for something more, that's good. Don't try to ignore it or substitute it with cheap, unfulfilling options. Don't just sit and scroll. Don't medicate with distractions, because we got a lot of them. And we can continue to try and fill that in with all this stuff and continue to try and numb that ache and medicate, or we can lean in. This week, I'll challenge you to choose proximity over isolation. What does that mean? That means, man, stay in the hard conversation. Don't run away because the conversation is difficult. Seek reconciliation. Ask for forgiveness. Like, and we're going to talk more on this in a couple weeks, so don't miss that. But stay in it. I would encourage you to show up physically. Like, what is that relationship that needs some work? Show up for them in a very real way, not just a text message. Go to their thing in person. Grab coffee together. Like, schedule time. Go hang out. And when you do that, put the phone down. All right? It doesn't count if you guys are on your phone 50% of the time. Like, we reach for this thing every time there's a down second, right? You have a conversation, and all conversations naturally come to a lull, and then everybody just goes, cool, what do we talk about now? You know, like, and we just use this as our safety blanket. Put it down. Don't pick it up in moments of quiet or boredom. Lean in. And be the initiator instead of waiting. You've been waiting on that person. You're so sad that you haven't hung out and they haven't called you. Like, you be the initiator. Be the one who makes the first move. Be bold. Set that relational tone. Because truthfully, you don't drift into healthy relationships. You practice them. In a world that tells you to disengage the moment you feel uncomfortable, I'm going to challenge you this week to start building a relationship that wins by leaning into it. And then finally is this: step into formation, not observation. You're not going to learn love from a podcast or just attending on Sunday mornings. You learn love in proximity. So make sure that you're in proximity. This is why we do huddles here. Huddles is what we call our small groups. Small groups is a moment every week for you to gather together with all these people that I was telling you about. I'll be a Packers fan in a huddle this semester, so maybe you want to avoid it, maybe you want to get in it, I don't know. But get together with different people and just talk and do life together for a period of time and try and grow spiritually together. It's why we run classes. We're doing Soul Care and Financial Peace University this semester. And these classes, they're more information forward. They're designed to teach you something, but you do it with other people. And that what you learn becomes real life as you're walking through it with other people and trying to figure out how they're implementing that stuff too. That's why we do Bible studies. We've got men and women that are gathering together every week and just studying the Bible together. And over that process, you're doing it in community. That's honestly how the Bible's meant to be read, by the way. You're not supposed to read it in isolation. It's why we have serving teams, right? It's not just because we need help on Sunday mornings or above, which we do, but like ultimately, serving teams are a place where you get together with other people and go be the church and not just attend church. And you do it in relationship, and you get together and you talk and you laugh and you serve together and you work side by side. Like, jump onto a serving team. We believe that God has a next step for you, and that next step isn't just spiritual, it's also relational. It's how we set up everything that we do. Discipleship happens in relationship, and we're pressing for a new level. We want a church full of relationships that win. If your life will never be stronger than your closest relationships, then who you're walking with matters. And you can take the next step right here today after service. At Crossline, we believe relationships that win are built by design. And so we're not going to be casual about relationships. We're not going to drift into them. We're not going to numb. We're not going to spectate. What we're going to do is we're going to build marriages that reflect Christ. We're going to build friendships that last. We're going to build families that heal. We're going to go after a church that feels like home, because we know that your life will never be stronger than your closest relationships. And we will not let culture disciple us in how to love. We'll let Jesus form us. And Jesus is inviting us into something higher. And so we're going to get ready to transition into worship here. Our first worship song this morning is called Build My Life. And it's a song all about how we can build our lives on the love that Jesus shows us. Will you guys stand with us as we get ready to worship?